Good morning, and all of you that are joining us online, welcome as well. Hey, praise report, a couple of them actually. I asked you, I think it was last week, might have been the week before, about our midweek Kids Night Out program and just how we were needing some help there to really, you know, make it kind of next level. And 24 of you signed up to help. So I just want to say thank you. So thank you for responding to that ask. And it's outreach oriented. Remember, we talked about the kids of the next generation. And that brings me to this event coming up in 2 weeks. First of all, I hope you come out. But second of all, this is a community event. This is an outreach event, and it's been growing each year. 2 years ago, there was about 300 people that came. Last year, there was about 500 kids that were there, and we had some 34 trunks. If you've been to it, it's basically kind of a tailgate party out here. People pull their cars, throw their trunk down, usually decorated, hand out candy, and the kids walk around. There's food truck, there's music. It's just kind of a festive thing this time of year, but it is outreach. And so hope you come. We need candy, so if you can provide some candy, just throw it in the buckets as you come in next week. That would be great. But we also need trunks. You, to bring your car. That's kind of the gist of it. It's trunk or treat. No trunks, you got no treats. So, if you can find it within, by the way, I encourage you to scan this QR code because it'll give you all the information. And if we can, if you will bring your car to use as a trunk, that would be super helpful. Our goal is 35 cars. That's what we had last year. We need 20. So we kind of need you to jump in. So it's 5 to 8 o'clock Friday night. That's it. So if your Friday night's booked, just book it after 8. You're good. Just come, the hurdle will be so low. Now, if you want to decorate your car and go all out and buy candy and that's your thing, great. But if you're going, I don't have bandwidth for that, the best I can do is just drive there and show up. We got you. All you got to do is bring in your car, throw the tailgate down, we will decorate it, and we will give you candy to hand out. Okay, so we just basically need your trunk and you for 3 hours. Can we do that? Oh, boy. All right, maybe we'll change the sermon this morning. So anyway, hope you can. And I know how Orange County is, lived here all my life, except Long Beach for a while, and everything's last minute sign up. So if you can let us know, like I said, scan the QR code, and there's a little area there that says count me in, I'll bring my trunk or whatever, we got you. So thank you for that. That's the last ask I'm gonna ask for at least a week. So appreciate that. Another praise report. We got an addition to the Pacific Coast Church family. And what that means is Luke and Shelby had their baby. It's a little girl, and her name is Stella Ray Oliver. And she looks just like her brother, Grayson. And I know some of you want the stats, and I apologize because last service I didn't have them. So I just told you it was the perfect length and weight. But if you need more details, 6 pounds, 13 ounces. Yeah, women are processing that. And then 19 and a half inches. So it's a keeper. You meet your limit, it's a keeper. So she was born on Tuesday, and mom and dad are doing great. Luke was here this morning, actually. And so, yeah, everything's going well. And they're just said, thank everybody for their prayers. So thank you for your prayers. And I'm sure we'll see him back here in a few weeks. I think legally it's 6. No, I'm just kidding. All right. Well, if you were here last week, I mentioned, we talked about, you know, how if something's broken in your house or whatever, to have the right tools to fix it is a game changer. You use the wrong tools, it makes things worse. And I shared with you about a landscape guy that came to my house to fix a valve and a sprinkler, and if, remember that? And then, how he did that, and he had these special tools, and he did it like in 10 minutes. It would have taken me half a day. Now, what I failed to mention to you was after he fixed it or replaced the valve, or in particular the sprinkler head, he had to adjust it. In other words, he just didn't hook it up and go, oh, water comes out, I'm leaving, because water was kind of shooting sideways. So what he did is he had his little tool there on the thing, and he figured out, well, 180 versus a 45, and he was going 180, so he's twisting this thing to make it 180, and then he adjusted how far it threw, and so basically, so it would do its job. It would be effective, right? And that was the basis of our discussion of fixing broken relationships last week. We talked about how our relationships can be broken, and they're painful. And if I ask for a show of hands, everybody's been through some kind of broken relationship, friendship, whatever, because that's what life's all about. It's hard and those things, and sometimes they can be repaired. The question is, do we have the right tools? Are we applying the right tools? Or are we just winging it and making matters worse? So we talked about that last week. But what I want to talk about this week is those important adjustments that need to be made along the way, that are the difference between, yeah, it's kind of hooked up and throwing water sideways, versus no, this is good coverage, this is healthy, this is effective. I've entitled this morning's message, Important Adjustments, How to Repair a Broken Relationship, Part 2. As we continue our study through John, in particular, chapter 21, verses 15 to 17. So we're right there towards the end of this gospel, and we'll probably wrap it up next week. But anyway, this is part two of a discussion, and the backdrop is Jesus and Peter. Now, as you remember, Peter broke the relationship with Jesus with three denials. We read about that in John 18. He betrayed him. He denied knowing him three times. Peter and Jesus haven't talked since that time. And now we find them in Galilee. The disciples, the resurrected Christ is alive and well and moving around and appearing to people, but the disciples had left Jerusalem and they'd gone back home to Galilee. In particular, they went fishing. That's what they used to do before Jesus. That's what they'll do now. And if you remember last week, they're out there fishing and they got skunked for the day. And all of a sudden, a voice from the shore says, "Hey, you guys catch any fish?" And they're going, "Nada." And he said, "Throw the net on the other side of the boat." And they did it, and they caught a boatload of fish. Do you remember this? And then the light went off for John in the boat, because he remembers that's how he came to Jesus. They were fishing. Jesus said, "Throw the net on the side." They caught a lot of fish. After that, Jesus said, "I'm going to make you fishers of men." They followed Jesus. That was 3 years ago. So for him, the light went off. Peter, it's Jesus. He jumped in the water and swam. And the guys were pulling the fish in. When they got to shore, Jesus is there, and he's cooked them breakfast. So this was all last week. And they're hanging out. Now, probably after a little bit of drying off for Peter, the text says he cooked breakfast, so they're eating. They're hanging out. And we covered this last week, but I just want to review it, because the context is still so tight. The text says in verse 15, when they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Notice what Jesus did there. He didn't just fluff over it. They haven't talked since the denial. He just didn't fluff over it. Just let bygones be bygones. No, there was an elephant in the room. There was a broken relationship. And Jesus dealt with it and confronted it, and was even specific about it. Now, Jesus had some indicators. He knew that Peter was going to deny him. Who jumped in the boat swimming to Jesus? Peter. So that showed some contrition. That showed some regret. He just didn't go, "You guys go in. I blew it with Jesus. I'm going home." So he's there. And Jesus was picking up on that. He didn't get into the he said, she said. He didn't get in the nuances. "Peter, really? You denied me?" And not just once, but twice? Are you serious? And then three times? What were you thinking? What happened to all this, "I love you, I'll follow you, I'll give my life for you"? Where's that at now? But he didn't do that. He just cut right to the chase and said, "Do you love me?" We talked about that principle, that when we're talking about repairing broken relationships, it's important that we identify the break. We get into the specifics of the issue, not the emotion of the event. Because when we get into the emotion of the event, then it's blame game, he said, she said, disagreements, all nuances, all this kind of stuff. What was the break? And for Jesus, it was the break of denial when Peter said he would never do that and he would love him. So Jesus is basically saying, are things different now? And so we talked about that principle. We talked about dealing directly with the issues of hand. But not only did he say, do you love me? The rest of that verse says, more than these disciples sitting here. Why did he do that? Because when Peter says, you're going to deny me, he said, oh, these guys may deny you, but I'm not going to deny you. I'll go to the wall. So now Jesus is saying, okay, are you still braggadocious? Are you still making these claims? Do you love me more than these guys? Because you said you did. Just seeing if you're still there. And he used the word agape love. Agape is unconditional. So he's saying, Peter, do you unconditionally love me more than these guys would? And what did Peter say? He didn't say, yes, I unconditionally love you more than these. No, he didn't even include the guys. And he used a different form of love. He said, I have affection for you, phileo. He used a different word. So he's humbled. He's not going to overclaim. He's not going to overprofess. He's not going to overpromise. And he even says, and you know, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. In other words, before I corrected you, you don't know me, God. You don't know what I'm capable of doing. I'm with you to the very end. He said, no, you know my heart. And effectively, you know it is conditional because I blew it. But I have affection for you, and I don't even compare to these guys. And so we talked about humility, how humility entering into repairing broken relationships is super important. That if we come in guns blazing, if we come in defensive, if we come in accusing, it's gonna go nowhere. Emotions never heal a broken relationship. So you gotta do some self-work before you get in. Some self-reflection, some Matthew 7 stuff. Hey, I'm ready to deal with the speck in their eye, but God, is there something with me? I'm ready to accuse them, God, but could I be accused of the same thing in other situations and kind of get humbled before we, and then we'll listen more than we talk, then we'll hear more than we accuse, and more the chance of the relationship being repaired. So that was all last week. Kind of broad strokes, tools, if you will. But we cut Jesus short, or the discussion short, because when he said, yes, Lord, you know that I love you, the next part says, he said to him, Jesus said to Peter, feed my lambs. That's interesting. Huh. So he said, do you love me? He says, you know, I love you. Yes, I do. And he says, feed my lambs. Now, Jesus always used this shepherd sheep metaphor to relate to what? Him and his followers. The followers were the sheep, and the shepherd was him. So he'd talk about the shepherd knows the sheep's voices, or the sheep knows the shepherd's voices, and they follow him, and this whole caring, feeding relationship. That's the metaphor for what is spiritually going on in the life of a believer. He's basically saying believers, like sheep, they follow the shepherd. Now he's saying, you feed, you nourish, you teach, you train lambs, young believers. Kind of random. Not really. Why? Because Jesus had plans for Peter. Remember those plans? Matthew's gospel. Jesus asked the disciples, who do people say that I am? And then they said that. And he said, who do you say that I am? Matthew 16, Simon Peter replied, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. And Jesus answered him, blessed are you, son of Barjona, for flesh and blood have not revealed this to you, but my Father who is in heaven. And I tell you, you are Peter. That means rock. And on this rock I will build my church. And the gates of hell will not prevail against it. I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven. Jesus planned on Peter starting the church, being the point guy, being the head pastor of the first church ever. And so what we see is he's saying, if you love me, be a good pastor. But he doesn't just say it once. He says it again. Next verse, verse 16. He said to it a second time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Notice he didn't say more than these. Now he's just dealing with him. And he said, yes, Lord, you know I love you. And he said to him, tend my sheep. So now it's not lambs, young believers. Now it's sheep, maybe older, more mature believers. And now it's not feed, but tend, care for, come alongside. Still same theme, be a good pastor. Third time, verse 17, he said to him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter was grieved because he said to him the third time, do you love me? And he said to him, Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you. And Jesus said, feed my sheep. So now feed the sheep. So nourish the unbelievers, care for the believers, nourish the believers, same theme, nuanced, not that important. Be a good pastor. Notice Peter was grieved that he did it the third time, which means Peter wasn't making a connection. But what Jesus was doing was going back to that campfire and saying, you broke the relationship three times. So I'm going to ask you three times. So he missed that. He's like, why do we keep repeating ourselves? Because you kept denying me. He gave him an opportunity to prove his love. It's really what he did. He's saying, you say it, prove it. And if you are a good pastor and you care for and nourish the sheep, then I'll know that your claim here is not just talk. And this is a super important component, adjustment, whatever you want to call it, when we're talking about repairing a broken relationship. Number one, or three, depending on how you're putting it together, create specific steps of accountability. Anytime there's light at the end of the tunnel for a relationship, and what do I mean by that? That we get to the point where we're saying, I'm sorry for doing that. I'm wrong for doing that. I regret doing that. That's an amazing start, but it ain't over. How do we know if you mean it? If there's specific steps. If you mean it, then do this. If you mean it, then don't do this. Because then that will prove that we're not just talking here. We're not just emotionally responding, but actually don't mean it in our soul. And that often gets lost. Because we feel good about a meeting where people, quote, repent, or people come together and admit, or people come together and do that, but then we leave and there's no action steps that kind of keeps the parameters in place and proves it, and then stuff happens again and we're going, what? Because we overlooked it. When you look through, like, the definition of love, right? I love you. That's what he was saying. I love you. Well, by definition, love has action. It's patient. Chapter 13, verse 4 of 1 Corinthians. It's kind. It does not envy or boast. It's not arrogant or rude. Those are all actions. It doesn't insist on its own way. That's a stubborn. It's not irritable. It's not resentful. It doesn't rejoice at wrong doing, things people are doing, but rejoices with the truth. When you look at the behavior, sinful behavior, they call it fruit of the flesh in Galatians, or the fruit of the spirit. Look at the behavior descriptions. Works of the flesh are evident. Sexual immorality, that's doing something. Impurity, sensuality, that's doing something. Idolatry, sorcery, enmity, strife, jealousy, fits of anger, rivalries, dissension, division, envy, drunkenness, orgies, and all the things like these. 90% of that is behavior. You say you're a Christian, What does your behavior look like? Turn the volume down. You say you're sorry. What does the behavior look like? You regret doing what you did? What does the behavior look like? Those need to be set in place. Like James talks about. You say you have faith, but there's no works. So at best, you say you have faith. So my wife is a excellent gift giver. If you're on her list, you get good gifts. So don't get on her list, because it'll cost me a lot of money. No, I'm just kidding. But she's a good gift giver. And the reason I say that is because she spends a lot of time, when she's buying you a gift, thinking about what you would like, not what she would like. And she'll often give you something that maybe she doesn't even prefer or not her style, but it's yours. Have you ever received the gift from somebody and you look at it and you go, this isn't me, but this is them? Right? Because they're going, I remember a friend of mine gave me a game for my birthday. Okay, right there is a swing and a miss because I'm not a game guy, but he is. And I remember when he handed me the game, it might have been Christmas, I can't remember. And I opened it and it's like, oh, a game. He's going, yeah, it's a great game. Can I see that for a second? And he's just like studying it for the next 20 minutes. This is a great game. Well, whose gift was it? It was his. So what I'm talking about here, when we set those steps of accountability, they might not even make sense to you, but they do to the person whom you broke the relationship with or they broke with you. Right? We've all heard of love languages and all that kind of stuff. You know, I would do counseling and I'd have couples in my office and they'd talk about not feeling loved by the other person. And they go back and forth, hey, you don't love me. You don't show me you love me. And I go, well, yeah, I love you. I'm making a living. I'm not. Well, you don't love me because you're not spending time with me. I love you. You know, you're off to the races. And it's like, okay, you don't feel loved. Do you love them? Yes. But you don't feel loved. I don't believe they love me. I love you. Okay, let's just stop with the love talk. What would make you feel loved? Because I'm going to hold you accountable to your claim. What would make you feel loved? Well, if they did these two things. Okay? You love them? Yeah. If you do these two things, it'll prove to you they love you. You can't claim this anymore if they do the two things. Would you agree? Yeah. See how it's got to get down literally to tangible. Otherwise, it's rooted on emotions and feeling loved and not feeling loved. Now, clearly, if this person doesn't do those two things, what does that prove? That they don't love the person that they claim to love. So those accountability steps are super important. I don't know what they would be for in your relationships. You have to come up with those. Well, this person falsely accused, this person gossiped about me, this person talked behind my back, super hurtful. Well, what would, and they're sorry for it, and they regret it, and they apologize for it, but what would prove to you that they really mean it? So now the onus is on you. Well, at a minimum, if they zipped it, maybe they start talking positive, maybe, you know, whatever. Whatever it is, you come up with it and agree on that, and then there's a place to move forward for healing and repair. Make sense? Now, some betrayals are significant. Involve affairs, involve all kinds of things. So that kind of breach of trust will take a while to what? Earn back. It's not just as simple as, I'm sorry. Prove you're sorry. Change jobs where the affair took place. Shut down, communicate. You know, it's got to be drastic because the betrayal was drastic. And in order to earn back that trust, the steps will feel drastic. But if you really mean it, you do it. And that's what Jesus was saying. You really mean you love me? Be a good pastor. Feed and care for the flock. In particular, what ended up happening is the church in Jerusalem. And we know Peter did. We know Peter's life ended up that way. Read 1 and 2 Peter. He ended up dying for his faith at an early age. And he loved Jesus so much, church history tells us, they crucified him, and he didn't want to be crucified upright like his Lord. They crucified him upside down. Action steps that prove the claim. Wow. But important. It's a little adjustment. Insertion there. Now, this next principle is kind of the overarching passage. So I'm going to read the passage in its entirety again. Maybe something will jump off, but just to give you the context and then talk about the principle that is being demonstrated. So back to verse 15. When he had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" He said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." And he said to him, "Feed my lambs." He said to him a second time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" He said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know I love you." He said to him, "Tend my sheep." He said to him the third time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" And Peter was grieved because he had said the third time, "Do you love me?" And he said to him, "Lord, you know everything, and you know I love you." Jesus said to him, "Feed my sheep." So he gives a behavior target to be a good pastor. I think it's worth noting that he did it in front of all the disciples so they would know that this is in place. They probably had their doubts about Peter after he blew it. That if, what that Matthew passage where Jesus said, "On this rock I'll build my church," is that really going to happen? Is he really qualified? Should he even be in the pastor at all? That he did in front of them. But don't miss the obvious. He did it. He did it. He didn't write Peter off. He didn't say, "You know what? I had plans. He's out." He didn't do a one and done. He didn't send Peter home. He allowed for the relationship to be repaired and healed. So our final point this morning, when we talk about an adjustment or when it comes to repairing a relationship, be open to new beginnings. Be open to the option of reconciliation, even when you think it's over. Be open to how things may have to change, even though you may not want them to. We all have the temptation for one and done. I tried, it didn't work, next. But most of the time, honestly, that is self-preservation because it's uncomfortable, relationships are messy. We would rather run than confront. We would rather avoid than engage. And when we run and we avoid, we stop any process of reconciliation from taking place. So it's very important that as much as we can, we stay at the table of possibilities. And we say, "Yeah, there's a lot of problems, man. There's a lot of betrayal. There's a lot of history. But if the person called me, I would take the call." That doesn't mean it's going to work, but I'm open. And this is what the issue really is. Ephesians 4:3 says, "Make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace." Not one effort, but every effort. We can only be responsible for ourselves. Can't be responsible for them. Yeah, but Mark, doesn't Titus 3:10 say this? "As for a person who stirs up division," i.e. hurts relationships, "after warning him once and twice, have nothing to do with him." So three strike rule or two strike rule? Don't forget the context of this. Paul the Apostle is writing to Pastor Titus as he pastors the church in Crete. So this is a pastoral direction that says if somebody in the church is dividing the church and somebody warns them, and they keep going and somebody warns them, no, you got to stop it, you got to end it, you got to protect the church. That's not individual stuff. That's not what we're talking about here. So there's a balance. There is a time where you go, no more, but I'll take the call, figuratively speaking. There's a balance between your mental health and staying in it. That's why it's important to understand, and I talked to you a little bit about this last week, from forgiveness to reconciliation. Because Peter asked Jesus about forgiveness, and he randomly picked a number. He came up to Jesus in Matthew 18. He said, how often will my brother sin against me and I have to forgive him? As many as seven times? And Jesus said, I do not say to you seven times, but 77 times. So how often are we called as Christians to forgive our brother when they do something, sin against us, hurt us, whatever? How often are we called to do that? Every time. This is a metaphor, 77 times. Every time. Well, how is that possible? Because you're in control of your heart for forgiveness. Remember, it has nothing to do with reconciliation. Forgive and forget. Forget that forget part. It's not biblical. So, we can forgive. What does that mean? That means you're not holding bitterness. You're not allowing for a root of bitterness. You're not desiring a pound of flesh. You're not, you know, you're not living in anger and turmoil and all that. You've released them. You hope the best for them. But you want to have nothing to do with them. That's the relational piece. That's the piece that requires both sides to come to the table. That's the piece that gets messy, and that we can apply these four truths that we talked about last week and this week, and they may not even work. But I can forgive them. Does that make sense? Very important to understand that distinction. Otherwise, kind of this delusional theology goes around. Forgive and forget, forgive and forget. Just act like it never happened. Hi, how you doing? There's five elephants in the room, but we're gonna act like, you know, it's not a big deal. And isn't that what Christians do? They forgive and forget. No, they forgive. We'll talk, but like Jesus said, we'll only go so long and not fake it. Let's get down to the issue. They just finished breakfast. He could have brought up a lot of topics. What do you think of those fish? Pretty cool, huh? They're big ones. Hey, you know, I'm not going to be here very long, but I want to talk about the church a little bit. No, he went right to Peter, man, because the elephant was in the room. Huh. I had a friend whose wife had an affair on him. They got divorced. And they got remarried 7 years later. Wow. That's next level. How is that possible? Because they were both willing to come to the table. Would have never been possible if there would have been a refusal. It was a slow burn. It required deep counsel. It required a lot of stuff. It was messy. But today they're happily married. Which highlights that God can repair relationships. No guarantees, but at least if we know we're applying and stepping into the truths that Jesus demonstrated, we know that as much as it depends on me, like the passage says in Romans, if possible, so far as it depends on you, live peacefully with all. So let me pray for specifically our relationships. And Lord, first of all, I do ask that you would just protect our relationships, our friendships, our marriages. Wherever there's relationships, Lord, help us to be prayerful in seeking you. But yet, Lord, we know also that there's a collision course going on out there every day, and so we've all felt those things and know those things. And Lord, we just want to know, as much as it depends on us, what are some things? And so, Lord, I pray for a real breakthrough, maybe in some significant betrayals and trusts that have been broken that are represented here this morning or online. Lord, at least it could be looked at through a different lens of possibility. And Lord, you know what that would mean or what that doesn't mean. And maybe some of us here this morning have really injured people. And we need to step into the Sermon on the Mount's truth of if you know your brother has something against you, you go to him. Maybe make that phone call, write that text. So let's just take 30 seconds here to bring before God that relationship that is struggling. God, I pray that there would be no root of bitterness. The enemy loved that. I just look at the fruit of the flesh, dissensions, rivalries, discord, all that stuff, all that relational stuff. So Lord, help us to demonstrate the fruit of the Spirit in ways that are healing, restoring. And we just pray for victory. In Jesus' name, amen. God bless you guys. Thanks for coming, and we'll see you next week. Thanks.